financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. We had a couple little technical snafus, but yeah. I think we're better.
You know, we all have so much stuff in our lives. A lot of it is digital. You know, paring back is on a lot of people's minds, I think, and simplifying. And sometimes we're locked into it, like you and I are right now. We are, you know, in a digital world. But for a lot of people who are thinking about simplifying their lives, they might be thinking about downsizing their home. And
right.
That's what I wanted to talk about today.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about downsizing, it comes in many forms. Obviously, you could just buy a smaller house, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could move to a smaller apartment. You could move to an in-law apartment if you, you know, if you're...
I'm dreaming of a granny pod, I got to tell you.
The granny pod.
Have you heard of the granny pods?
I have. Why don't you tell people your idea of the granny pod, though? Why you like a granny pod?
I like it because I just feel like, you know, you'd be in somebody's backyard. So for me, it'd be like attached to somewhere where the kids were. They could come over. I could send them back to the main house. And then it's small, so it's easy to keep clean, and you don't have so much stuff in there. And I just think it would be cute as a button. But
yes.
I will say, I just for fun, like, look at prices, and they're still expensive. It's still expensive.
What prices are you seeing for those kinds of things?
I mean, $200, $250 for,
Wow.
like, a small little under 600 square foot little granny pod.
Okay, so that's much more than the research I did, which says you can build, say, a tiny home or a container home, anywhere. Now, this is a huge range, but anywhere between $20,000 and $150,000. And you're seeing prices even higher than that.
Well, because they don't include, when they're showing you that price, they're not including, like, the septic and the electric and
that's right.
It costs a lot of money.
Yes, and that's, we were going to talk about that, because so the main idea behind this is just what you said. It would be cute as a button, and it would be easy to keep. And okay, if you're downsizing, why am I talking about it, right? Why is the Money Doctor talking about this? Because if you're downsizing to save money, you need to pay attention to the details that you just brought up. And I knew you would, because I knew you were doing the research on the granny pod. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, maybe the most expensive part of, let's focus on tiny homes for a moment. The most expensive part of a tiny home or a container home, we'll talk about each of those, is maybe getting the land. Your land may cost you more, right? So there are zoning bylaws that just say things like, you can't just park your camper in the back of someone's house and live in it, right? There are zoning
But a lot of the local towns
about this.
have just approved the ADUs, so that's a good step in the right direction.
It's true. And even tiny homes, Massachusetts only approved tiny homes with, what was it called, Appendix Q in 2020, right? It's only 5 years ago. So this stuff's coming into its own now, and you can build one that is, if you have the skills, you can save yourself between 30 and 50% of the cost of the unit by building it as a DIY thing. And there are kits out there, right, that you can build.
They sell them on Amazon.
They do sell them on Amazon as well.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yes, you can find them all over the place. In fact, you can buy some of these homes used now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing you need to remember when you're talking about that, okay, I'm going to get a kit. My friends are going to do the work for me or whatever. All right.
Right.
You
Yeah.
need to be realistic about this. What will it really cost you? And you need to check out your zoning laws in your area, because you will likely have to come up to code with things like electrical, plumbing, right? Maybe you can do this stuff on your own, but you may need a professional to do that. And they are not cheap, and they are not always readily available.
And not always getting stuff done on time either.
That's what was that? The movie, The Money Pit. How long was everything going to take?
Right.
2 weeks. Everything takes 2 weeks. Okay. So you know what happens. A lot of contractors start many jobs at once. They get the money in the door, and then lo and behold, they don't show up for a little while. Not all contractors, obviously. So you really have to be careful about this. So if you're looking to downsize in order to save money, you really need to do your research and see what the overall cost will be, like you've been doing, with the land, the plumbing, the electrical, the wastewater, right? These are all things that might be that might have a higher cost for a tiny home or a container home than you might have in your regular home. You might need some special things like a water filtration system so that you can take rainwater and turn it into drinkable or potable water, right? Even your homeowner's insurance, you might need a specialized policy and it might be more expensive. So you have to do your groundwork for this. Now, that being said, let's talk just a minute about tiny home versus container home. So a container home is built out of a metal container,
I
right?
know, it's
Like a,
crazy.
yeah, but they make
They make
some,
some of them really fancy and nice.
they really do, and they can be welded, so they can stack one on top of another and things like that. So you can build quite a container home if you if your desire is that. But you will also have to be aware of probably different insulation. Metal cools quickly in our environment. In you know, you can live in these year round, but in our environment in Massachusetts, we're going to care about insulation to keep us warm in the winter. In California or someplace that's much warmer, they might care about insulation to keep them cooler in the summer, right? But insulation is insulation, and you'll have to have a special kind for the metal units. If you go online and you look up tiny homes or container homes, you will find amazing pictures, absolutely amazing images. I
So
might put,
beautiful.
I know we're on radio, but we also put this out as a podcast. I might try to fit some of those into here. It's just astounding how creative people are with these
Oh, I'll
things.
send you some of my favorites because I look at this
Oh,
stuff all the time.
I would love that. Let's do that. Let's put some of yours in for sure. So, you know, some of the things that you might end up spending money on that you maybe don't think of when you're just thinking, hey, I'm going to downsize. It's 50 grand for that house and I can put it on my lot and I'm good to go, right? You might have to think about things like, oh, I don't know, your furniture. You know, will your furniture fit in a tiny home? And it's likely that you will opt for multi-purpose furniture, things with storage space inside of them, things that do double duty. In your kitchen, one of the suggestions I read about, I think it was Better Homes and Garden had n a nice article about this too. And so did, I think it's tinyhomes.com. Tinyhomes.com like lists all the places, all the counties in Massachusetts that you can do these, and it points you to their bylaws. It's a great article. But Better Homes and Gardens gave a lot of tips, and we'll go into some of those tips, I think, in the second half especially. But, you know, one of them was in your kitchen, maybe make use of things like floating shelves. Now, this stuff will appeal to people in any home. I walked into my own kitchen and was like, hey, could I put some floating shelves up and gain my counter space? You know?
The only thing, just have to remind people, you've got to keep it clean then.
Yeah, you have to keep it clean. So things like this will appeal to anybody. And in the kitchen, they were talking about maybe a rolling cart so that you don't clutter up your floor space in a tiny home or a container home on a permanent basis, and you pull it out when you need it, and when you don't, it goes, you know, somewhere else and becomes something else, right? So maybe it becomes your TV cart, and then it's your kitchen cart or whatever. So you can get it to do double duty or a nightstand or whatever. So those kinds of things I think are really interesting and fascinating. And when you look at some of these images of tiny homes and container homes, you see these incredible loft spaces, because by definition, it in order to be approved, at least in our state, it has to have a living space, a cooking space like kitchen, and a bedroom, right? And a bath. Has to have those areas. And they all come. This stuff is so complicated if you start to look at it. So just when I say zoning bylaws, just you have to look at Massachusetts, and then you have to look at your town or city, because although Massachusetts has approved these homes, tiny home is under 400 feet, under 400 square feet, right? A tiny home is under 400 square feet. Your town or city also has its bylaws, and you will be expected to adhere
Follow
to them.
those.
Yeah, absolutely. And in some towns and cities, you can't get it approved without the building inspector, right? So this stuff's really got to pay, you've got to pay attention to it. But just to let people know, it is, as you said, really becoming more prevalent, right? And so in that list of places in Massachusetts, for instance, counties, Franklin County, where I live, is one of them that's approved it through the Greenfield City Council. Berkshire County, north of us, approved. Hampshire County, you're in Hampshire or Hamden County? You're in
Hampshire.
Hampshire County. I believe it's approved there. But yeah, I'm sure that it is. Northampton, in particular, has approved those kinds of things. And even and I, most of the counties now, but even Nantucket, if you're thinking, well, this is something for a rural area, or higher dollar places might not do it, even though we have plenty of high dollar area. Nantucket did it with a zoning bylaw 139, and they actually will approve under 500 feet. So it may
Got
be
it.
a tiny home in your mind, but not a tiny home to the state, maybe acceptable by your town in certain districts. So you got to look at all this stuff. And there are fees involved with, inspections and permits and things like that.
I feel like other countries have known about this a lot longer than us, because I always hear about, I watch House Hunters all the time, the casitas for the mother-in-laws. And I'm like, that's basically a little tiny house, and I love it.
They get these cute names like tiny house and casita and granny pod, and that's really appealing to people, I think. It is, I should say, a little different than your RV, right? These homes can be lived in year round. They're
And
designed
there
to
are
be lived in year round.
some tiny homes though that have wheels on them, so you can move them that way.
Yes, and you have to, so that's one of the considerations for a tiny home versus a container home, is that you might be looking for a mobile kind of a home, right? But you'll have to check with your town to find out, because a lot of the towns have said, yes, we'll approve these under 400 square foot homes if they're on a full foundation.
Oh,
That
yeah, and that's
means
more money.
another cost. That's
Yeah,
absolutely right.
there is all these hidden costs.
Yeah. So I think people get really excited initially about the idea of a tiny home, about decorating a tiny home. I have to tell you, I have a second property, and on that property, when I bought it, there was, and still is, a small space. It used to be an office, and it was nothing special. And we turned it into a little tiny home, right?
Oh, I love that.
It has a composting toilet, which was approved, right? It has a self-contained sink. Now, I would say this unit is not, we don't rent it or anything like that. It's just those things are creature comforts when we're in that space, right? And it's in addition to the primary home. But those, it's not really designed for long-term living, but it has a nice deck and a view of water, and it's lovely. And every time somebody opens the door, myself included, I think I like it even better than the house, right? It's just
So
like,
cute,
I open the door, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just want to be in here, right? So you have to think about those kinds of things, and you could trim your costs by doing things like a compost toilet, and you can also keep your footprint small, and they're ecologically friendly, all of that. But you have to remember that it has to be maintained all the time. These are
Well,
things you're
this
going to
is
have
my
to.
idea, Francis. And you tell me if this is a good idea or not.
Oh boy.
I thought that I was going to save on land costs. Because I'm just going to get the tiny home, put it on the back of a truck to move it, and just show up at my sister's. Have them unload it. And then I figure it'll be more work to get rid of me than to just let me stay.
What's your sister's number? Let's dial her up right now and ask her if it's a good idea. But
Maybe get approval before you show up with a house.
you bring up another point. Sometimes people want to use these for seasonal properties, and that has its own rules. Temporary tiny homes and temporary cottages like this have their own rules, so you have to check with your town about that. But in the end, I think when people are looking to save money on these things, there are a few different genres that it appeals to, right? Sectors that it appeals to. It appeals to somebody looking to downsize. Maybe they're looking to sell their home, get the equity out of their home. They're tired of going up and down stairs. They want to be closer to their kids. They can do it on a lot right next door, or part of their lot, or whatever. And that's an area of people, a sector of people that like to do this. Another sector are people looking for second homes, like we just talked about. It's a temporary second home, and so it's less expensive. They don't have to worry about the major insulation if they're only going to be there seasonally, and they're going to shut off all the water anyway. Their town might give them some breaks on things that they have to have for a seasonal property rather than a full-time property. And first-time home buyers, first-timers. If we're talking about this, like, oh, it's under 400 square feet, like, this is a major problem. There are a lot of people who live in apartments that are under 400 square feet, and that's it. That's life, right? They don't have a basement. They don't have a lot of the things that other people have, an attic or things like that, but they make do with that just fine. So the main thing I'm going to tell you in this half before we go to break, I guess, is just, if you're thinking about this, I want you to consider renting a tiny home for a few months.
They're hard to find though to rent, right? I mean, I
They
always
are.
look online just to see, and they don't pop up that much. Used
They,
ones do, like for sale, like you were
that's
talking about
right.
to buy,
But
but
you
I don't
might,
see that
yeah, but
much.
you might be able to make a deal with somebody who has one for sale to give them a little
Got it.
income renting it for a few months with the option to buy it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So we can talk about that when we come back.
All right. In the meantime, let's get your phone number.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham, and we're talking about, well, I call them granny pods, but I guess they could be tiny houses or container houses, ADUs.
That's right. And, people other than grannies are buying them, right? So, and building them. And we were just talking about first-time home buyers. And I said, what I'd like people to do of all ages who are looking at this is to think about renting one for a period of a few months and trying this on. What happens when you have 40 years of living in your home and all your children's pictures and all your creature comforts, all your tchotchkes are all hanging out there and
Is
you
it
like to
Marie
have that stuff.
Kondo? You got a Marie Kondo everything. Yeah, it's hard.
Excuse
It's hard
me.
to get rid of stuff, especially when you have kids or it's just like you said, that many years you collect stuff.
Yeah, Marie Kondo, actually that's one of the things about decluttering. There are several ways to declutter, and
Yeah.
her idea is you only keep things that talk to your heart, that speak to your
Right.
heart, and you get rid of everything else. But
Perfect.
a
I'm
lot
getting rid of all my bills.
Perfect.
Just talking about that.
Digitize.
Yeah.
Digitize, right? No more paper storage. Yeah. So there are a lot of things like that. Another method is a four box method. I'm going to keep this, I'm going to donate that, this is going to get trash, that's going to
Right.
go into storage, right? And you put everything in one of those four boxes and then you sort it from there. So there are lots of tips about decluttering. But in talking about renting, you said, well, there aren't a lot available for rent. And while that's true, you could rent a space, an apartment on a month-to-month lease that might be of a similar size. Just see how it feels to live in a space that size
Yeah.
because, especially if you have more than one person or you have a pet, you're going to want everybody to have their own personal space, even the pet, I guess, right? A space
Yeah.
where the pet is comfortable and not on you all the time or whatever. So you need to think about that. But one creative thing that I can tell you that most people don't think of is to rent with an option. And what that means is you find somebody with one of these houses for sale that you think you might want to buy, and you have a conversation with them. Maybe you involve an attorney to help you through this or a coach. And you say, I think I might want to buy this. And it's the middle of winter. I know it's not flying off the market or whatever the situation is. It's been on the market for a long time and it hasn't sold yet. I would like to propose that I rent it from you for 3 months. That if I, and that I have the option at the end of 3 months to buy it for this dollar amount, and you agree on it right then and there, so nobody can change their minds and
Right.
get harmed in this. And then at the end of 3 months, if you exercise your option, then whatever guidelines are in the option take place, like you're going to credit me 50% of my rent for the first 3 months toward the purchase price, or whatever numbers you come up with. And if you don't take the option, they've gotten 3 months' rent and it's back
Right.
on the market for sale again, right?
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
And you can, I mean, these contracts can be just about anything that two people can agree on. So that's a way to try it on. The ones that you see for sale, I will tell you, sure, you can get a house that's for sale, but guess why they're for sale and they're only a couple of years old? Because they weren't the right fit for the person. They didn't like it as much as they thought living in a granny pod, right?
Yeah,
So.
and you're right. Like, if you maybe rent something that same size, because the thought of it is great. But even for me, like, I'm like, oh, this would be great. But who knows? I might feel claustrophobic. I know for sure the lofts you were talking about, I would definitely want one with the height so you
Yes.
could stand up. There's a lot of them that you have to kind of crawl up there.
Well,
And I
there are.
think that would be, especially as you get older, that'd be hard.
Now that's an important point, and that's partly where the container homes, I think, are appealing to people because they can do it on one floor,
Right.
much longer, much larger space. There are zoning bylaws in your town or city that will tell you, for instance, the ceiling height in the overall habitational areas. What's the word I'm looking for? Whatever. This
Living
the
spaces.
ceiling, yeah, and the living spaces. The ceiling height in the living spaces has to be no less than 6 foot 8 inches. But in a loft, maybe it could be 6 foot 2 inches, or 6 foot 4. And so you have to look up your zoning bylaws to see what you have to do for that. Even things like stair treads and stair ceiling height as you're going up to that loft are governed. So you need to think about those kinds of things. We talked a little bit about land costs, that it's not too much to say here. Other than that, the mortgage for these homes is not typically a traditional mortgage. You might have to get a different kind of mortgage or personal loan. So you should think about that. But when it involves, and talk to your bank about it, when it involves a lot that you already own, a piece of land that you already own, you may be able to use that land in order to get a construction loan or something of that nature to make your tiny home dream come true, right?
So that's
So,
like collateral.
because I mean, there's something called an improved lot, which is worth more than a plain piece of land. An improved lot usually has, a septic or connection to town water or sewer, something like that. But it might also have a foundation. If you're in a town where your tiny home has to be on a foundation, maybe you can afford to build the foundation and get your utilities connected, but you need a loan for the rest of the build. Well, you might be able to borrow against your improved lot in order to do that. So talk to a lender about this, a mortgage broker. If you need help with that, you can always call us. We're not a lender, but we'll refer you to places that we trust. We talked about your insurance being more. I do want to talk about some of the tips. So some of the tips that I thought were fun, and these will apply to all homes, not just tiny homes, and that's why I chose these particular ones. And these were from, I think, Better Homes and Gardens. Cleaning out your wardrobe. Oh my goodness, right? If you are going to move, now some people don't have a lot of clothes, and some people have a ton of clothes, and they switch them out from winter to spring to summer, seasonally, whatever. So this was a tip I loved. Turn your hangers in the opposite direction. And
So you know whether they're,
when you get to the end of the season, the ones that are in the opposite direction, you haven't worn. Wasn't that a clever tip?
that really is,
I thought that one was great. Install wall-mounted storage. So this is not just floating shelves, but anywhere, bookshelves, anything that you can get off of your floor and onto the wall. If you think about this in terms of a tiny home, you'll even think about using ceiling space, right? And things like the space above your cabinets to put. I remember my brother built a house in Florida. He built this big house. It was a beautiful big house, but he had a problem with large platters. He entertained a lot and he had these huge platters. And so when they built his kitchen cabinets in the kitchen, they made the ceiling a foot higher, and above the kitchen cabinets was a rail, and he put all his platters up there and they were all on display. He had to get a ladder to get to them, but they weren't shipped up and in a cabinet, So think about using things like that, or the insides of things, like even the insides of your cabinet doors. You have to be careful when you put things on there that when you close, it doesn't, there is space to do that, it doesn't hit a shelf or something. But you can do a lot with decluttering, your house by using things like that.
And the tiny houses do show you good tips too. Like I always see hidden storage in the stairs. Yeah, that's a good idea.
In the stairs, in the floor sometimes, in the ceiling sometimes, right? Under the loft. Things that do double duty, like the refrigerator is built in, but where it's built in, there's a thing above it that happens to be the television, right? Which you wouldn't maybe do in a typical home, but in a tiny home, that's your living space. You're going to get up and cook something. You're going to pull the refrigerator open. You're going to sit down. You're going to eat it and watch it on TV, right? All in that one area.
All in one.
Think about things like your furniture. We talked about multi-purpose furniture. But when you're thinking about a tiny home or a container home, you also want to start thinking about slimmer furniture. In other words, think about what's important to you. The place that you sit is important to you, but do you really need big, bulky arms on your chair? We had this whole phase where everybody went to overstuffed furniture, oversized furniture. That is not going to work in a tiny home. You got to find slim stuff. Think more modern, more sleek, less space taking. So think about things like that. One of the things about tiny homes that we used in this other property I was talking about as well is mirrors. and shiny objects. So I'm not talking about like aluminum foil everywhere, right? But you can take you can hang a mirror anywhere, and it will help you
Looks
bring
like a
more
more
light
space.
in. Yeah, it looks like more space.
Yeah.
It brings light in. But you can even just lean one against a wall, you know, on top of a bureau or something like that, a big mirror, and make a statement with it. But also shiny surfaces, like if you think about a glass coffee table instead of a hardwood coffee table, that allows you, it looks like the objects are floating. It allows you to see the carpet underneath it or the floor underneath it. It's less noticeable as a big clunky object. It looks
Right.
like it opens the space. Or anything that is reflective, you know, silver appliances or anything that's reflective will help bring the light in and will help to make the space feel a little more open. But decluttering is the absolute number one thing. So,
Yeah.
I mean, this is just a fun topic, and I hope that if there are people listening to this that are considering it, that what they heard me say is watch your dollars, research, right?
The
Make
other, go ahead.
you.
The other good thing that I forgot to mention earlier that it's really good for is there's a lot of people that have parents now that don't want to give up their home, but they don't want to go into an assisted living facility, but they need help. You've got this in your backyard. They still have their independence, but you've got somebody right there, and it just seems like the best of both worlds. They don't feel like they're living with you, or you've got to deal with like the son-in-law or daughter-in-law and whatever, the noise with the kids. But somebody's there if they need something.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know how the trend started, but in Northampton, Mass, you have a wonderful facility that is an assisted living facility, and they have independent living cottages. They get the socialization if they want to go to the main building and attend classes or bingo or music or whatever. And they also have help if they need it.
They're wonderful, but they can get super expensive.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about what those cost per month, how many months you're going to pay for that, that's, I think, where people are starting to say, but I could own this. And again, you know, it's not just for people downsizing, first-time home buyers, people who are looking to keep a small footprint and live a simple lifestyle, people who don't have a lot of clutter to begin with are like, boy, I could live in a tiny home. It's my own
Yeah.
space. I don't have a landlord. I could do that, you know.
I've seen people too on some of those shows that I watch all the time where they put that in the back, they moved into that and rented out the big house, got their mortgage paid for way quicker than they would have.
You brought up a very important point when you said rent. A lot of towns will allow these tiny homes, but they have to be occupied by the owner and not rented out. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, I'll just build a bunch of those and rent them out, you better check with your town first. However, something like we were talking about where you're renting to own, you could check with the town, but that is probably going to be allowed if you're doing it as part of a real estate contract.
It's not
That's
like an
really,
Airbnb kind of thing.
yeah, it's different than that. So
Well, this was so fun. I have been looking at these, and I will send you some pictures because I have some that are just beautiful, which you know are not under 100,000. But I'd love to share the pictures.
I just love the ideas. It doesn't matter what the cost of the home is that you're looking at. There are so many creative ideas, and a lot of them are really about saving money as well as space. And so I hope this was a useful and fun show for people. Yeah.
Super fun. Let's get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can also visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Rand. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am good. I'm freezing. It's been so cold lately, but good besides that.
Yeah, we had lots of snow here in Massachusetts. Snow and then ice, right? Snow and then ice. Anyway, I thought what we might do to take our little snow day time here. is to promote a little financial literacy and actually
Okay.
go beyond our general financial literacy into financial fluency, what I would call financial fluency. So if you're fluent in a language, you know, everybody knows what that means, right? I'm fluent in French, I'm fluent in German. It's pretty impressive. But it also affords you an opportunity to understand things better. If you're traveling to Italy and you are fluent in Italian versus your little, you know, book that you have some phrases in,
Right.
you're
Yeah.
going to have a different experience, right? You'll feel more at ease. You'll be able to communicate with people. You'll be able to, in fact, argue with people successfully.
Right.
I remember when my brother was studying French and he had one goal. He said, I just want to become so fluent that I could have an argument in French.
That's funny. I
It
took
is.
3 years of French in high school, and all I remember are the curse words. That is it.
Well, you could probably get an argument started in French,
Exactly.
but I don't know who's going to bail you out of it. It won't be me, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm telling this story because it is the same about financial fluency. Although, you know, that sounds really difficult, right? It sounds hard, and but that's one of the obstacles people face. And especially in this environment where people are saying to me they feel sort of helpless, they feel a little out of control, they don't think they know what's going to happen to their money, and they don't love the sense that they're just, I got a guy or a woman who does that, and I just trust my financial advisor to make the right decisions. And they ask me questions like, you know, do you think we're going into a bear market? Are we going into a bull market? How long do you think it will last? And so, you know, people are trying to make their decisions based on these buzzwords, on this lingo that gets thrown around. And it essentially is akin to what you're saying. You know all the curse words, but not what to do with them, right? So, yeah. So I wanted to talk about this. I'm going to call it financial fluency.
Okay.
I don't know how much of this will get through in this show, but there's always more. So I would love to invite people to give us a little feedback about this because, as you know, a lot of this show is often about very basic knowledge, very psychological terms about how we deal with money and what makes us good or bad with it. And all of that is still true, and we're still doing a lot of that. But I think having some basic knowledge of the terminology would help you. Now, this started for me, Jess, as you know, my initial thought is as I come up with these show ideas, whatever, in the shower or in a meeting or driving my car, like everybody comes up with their creative thoughts in different ways. My first thought was I should do a show for small business people about understanding how to get your money in order to help you with your small business. And that came from, as many of my ideas do, a recent phone call I got from someone who actually has started a small business from their home. They're quite successful at it. They tripled their revenue last year, which is a pretty great goal for at any level, right? That they obtained. And so, or that they attained. So they called me saying all the right things. And I said, boy, you sound really grounded. I can't wait to work with you. You really sound like you know what you're talking about. And the person said, no, that's why I'm calling you.
So I can figure it out.
I'm making money and I'm, you know, I'm building this thing. But they said a very interesting thing to me, which got me emotionally and caused me to start to think about this terminology that I take for granted, like someone who's fluent in a language, right? And what they said is, I started this business, it's doing really well, but I don't want to, you know, take the risk of damaging something within my family because I didn't know what I was doing. That to me was very interesting because they clearly were in this business in order to be able to stay home with their children, you know, grow the income, really help out in the family, but they were starting to get worried that they didn't know what they were doing. And that came at tax time. And at tax time, small business people understand, especially at tax time, that, oh, they didn't have enough put to the side for taxes. They didn't understand how much would be paid in taxes. And bam, they had a wonderful year and now they owe money. And because they didn't see that on their radar, they don't have a lot in savings usually. They've spent most of their money back into the business. So that started this whole thing, and we could do a whole show on just business terms. But it did occur to me that in addition to being a small business person, this person was also a parent and was also a family member and, you know, somebody who brought their kids around and was trying to raise their kids with certain values, and they were lacking, although they were doing well at it, they were lacking this very basic foundation that I think we should all have. So I'll throw out some terms and we can talk a little bit about them, but mostly what I'm trying to get, what I want people to get out of this show is a better sense of understanding in general. When they hear this on the TV or the radio, when they hear, boy, inflation is up. What does that really mean? And what can you do when you understand it to protect yourself, to counteract, to benefit from it, right? You can actually benefit from certain things if you know what they mean. Above all, what I'd really like people to be able to do, this is like the top goal. I'd like you to be able to have an argument with your financial planner, know what they're talking about, okay? A vicious argument. I just mean when they say, gee, well, I think your risk tolerance is really good and you're in a high risk tolerance zone, and I'd like to make these investments for you that will fit with your high risk tolerance or your low risk tolerance portfolio, that you have some a semblance of knowledge rather than just like, okay, yeah, I like to go to the casino. I guess I'm high risk.
Do you think that sometimes people get into these conversations either with a financial planner or with other people, and they get embarrassed if they don't know what the term is, so they just kind of go along with it?
Yeah, even if it's not full-blown embarrassment, who likes to say, wait, I don't know what you're talking about? Yet it's maybe the best thing you could do is to say, stop. Remember, you pay these people to work for you. Even if you're not paying them out of pocket, they are getting paid to work for you. Now, it's a little weird because they're often getting paid by an insurance company or an investment company, and you're not feeling that you're paying them. So you have a sense of my financial planner is doing a great job for me, and I don't want to ruffle any feathers there. But I do think it's really important to say, and here's how you can say it. I'm a person who really likes to be involved in the outcome of my life. And so let's just make an agreement that when you're telling me stuff and I don't understand it, I need to be able to ask you, and you need to be able to be patient with me. Tell me in more than one way until I get it. Speak to me in accessible language so that I can understand what it is. Don't say dumb it down for me because it's not anything about being dumbed down. It's just about learning the terminology and what it means. Okay. So I think you're right though, Jess. The resistance we have to being belittled or looked upon as not intelligent or less than or inexperienced or distrustful, those are all barriers to asking your planner or even to having a conversation with your friends about money. Almost everybody will tell you they know somebody other than them who is really good at money. My sister, my brother, my friend, my teacher, my doctor, they're really good with money. You don't really have any idea other than that they have more money than you have, and they maybe throw some of this lingo around. Okay. That doesn't
They
mean
sound
they're
really
good with
smart.
money. That's right. That doesn't mean they're good with money. Okay. So let's just start with inflation. Okay. I think if we said define inflation, most people, you can tell me what you think most people would say too. I think most people would say, I can't afford stuff. The prices of everything is going up.
Yeah, that's what I would say is that everything, like right now, the cost of eggs is because of inflation.
That's right. It's absolutely true. But from a financial professional standpoint, we use things like the CPI or the WPI, right? The C Consumer Price Index or the Wholesale Price Index to assign a rate of inflation. Do you need to know that? No. But what you do need to know is that inflation isn't just prices going up. Okay. An influx of, what do I want to say? Like an increase of the country's monetary, of our money can cause inflation, right? We
It
print
has
more
something to do
money
with
than ever.
supply and demand, too, right? Is that what you've said before?
It does have to do with supply and demand. But the thing I want people to recognize about inflation, and everything has to do with supply and demand in a roundabout way. But the thing I want people to recognize about inflation is that it's a decline in your purchasing power. So, although inflation is the term I'm talking about, the thing I want you to remember is you can't afford to buy stuff, which means you have a decline in your purchasing power. In other words, your dollar doesn't have as much power as it had because of inflation. So if things are costing you, this is a ridiculous number, I hope, if things are costing you 10% more than they did before, your dollar is now worth 90 cents. Right? So that's an important thing to understand in the big picture of things because it translates into your savings. Not just what you can buy, but what your savings are doing in relation to what you can buy. If your earnings were growing at a certain percentage before, let's say 6%, right? And you thought you were doing okay because inflation was at 3%, so you were out earning or outpacing inflation. When inflation goes over that limit, if your earnings are still sitting there at a fixed 3%, you are now losing money. So it isn't as simple as just, wow, inflation is terrible. I can't afford to put gas in my car. Translate that in your mind to my dollar is worth less, and I'm actually possibly losing money, which means I need to go look at my investments again because inflation is up. So every term will be interrelated, and that's what makes it so difficult, I think, to understand this stuff without taking a full-blown course in economics, right? But just start to think about the way that works. There's a yin and yang to it, an ebb and flow. Inflation goes up. What do you look at? Geez, I better not just look at the price of eggs. I better also look at what I'm earning. Do I have to adjust in some way my portfolio in order to make that work? Right. So inflation. I know we have lots to talk about. I just want to hit one quick little thing before we take a break, and it's net worth. All right. People are always talking about what's your net worth? And I of people, and they start telling me what their house is worth and things like that, and they add up all their assets. But your net worth is actually subtracting your liability from your assets. So if you own a house that's worth 300,000, but you owe 200,000 on it, that portion of your net worth is $100,000. Your
So
house is
there are
worth
many
300.
cases where your net worth could be in the negative then, right?
That's exactly right. There are people who have lots of people and lots of businesses who have negative net worth. And we have these terms to be able to quantify the value of something, the value of your net worth as a person, the value of a company's net worth, so you can decide whether you want to buy their stock or not. So, yeah, net worth is your assets minus your liabilities. Okay.
Let me get your phone number because I feel like after this show, people are going to have a lot of questions.
Yeah, our phone number for some more numbers is 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hymn.com, no, hugyourmoney.com to get all the information there. You have it spelled right out. I like that. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we are getting fluent in money today.
We're trying. Okay. And this is, at least this is the beginning. If people like this, we can do more of it. The hope here is that we can make it conversational enough to not be so dry and so afraid of it. But it is like learning a language. You know, there are times when you're going to need to conjugate a verb, and nobody likes to do it, but it's got to be done. And that's the work we're doing here today.
And the more you talk about it, the more knowledge you get, like with anything. But even from you and I starting the show, like I couldn't have told you before, I don't know if I can now, but the difference between an annuity and a CD or some of those things. But when you start talking about it more, then you get that knowledge.
Yes. The problem with finance, if you want to call it a problem, the difficulty is that it's such a broad area. Nobody knows it all. You know, you might be an annuity expert, but you don't know anything about the lending market, right? A mortgage market. Or you might know mortgage, but you don't know stocks. And it is so vast that people become an expert in their area. And it's really not necessary, believe it or not, in order for them to get those licenses to know a lot of this other stuff. It's you'd have to be, well, you'd have to be in school a long time to do this, right? So there is a tendency to think of people who are better at money than you are, or who have a profession that re revolves around money, like a mortgage broker, for instance, to assume that they know all this other stuff too. And I can tell you, as having many people in, that are professionals as clients, what I've just told you is absolutely true. You will not always know everything about finance. And some of the stuff, myself included, sometimes I'll be in an area and I'll just say, teach me about that because that's not what I'm an expert in, right? Tell me
Right.
something, explain that to me. So if I can do it, you can do it. Stop the person and say, explain this to me like I'm a 6-year-old. Okay, I need to understand what that really means. Okay, let's talk about liquidity. Here's another simple one, right? We'll throw out some simple ones to begin with. Liquidity. All liquidity is the ease of which you're able to convert your assets to
Into
liquid,
cash.
to cash.
Okay.
Okay. So when I say to
I
people,
knew that one. Woo
you did
woo.
know that one, yes, and you know lots of them, and this is part of the exercise is to, you know, to celebrate the things that you already do have under your belt. And to bolster your confidence a little bit when you're having a conversation with someone, don't let them talk down to you. You know lots of things they don't know. It may not be the monetary terms, but you know lots of things the other person doesn't know. Stand your
Right.
ground, okay? And participate in your own financial wellness. Okay, so the ease at which you convert your assets to cash. So a lot of times when I ask people how liquid they are, or here's a real life example, right? What are you going to do when you retire? We're going to sell our home. That's where all our money is, in our home. Where are you going to live? We're going to rent a place or we're going to buy another home. Okay, then that's not a liquid asset. That's money you're going to exchange from your home here to your home somewhere else, right? You're
Right.
going to downsize. Maybe some of it will be converted into cash, but in general, real estate is not considered to be a liquid asset. It takes time to build these properties. It takes time to sell these properties. You can't just decide tomorrow, hey, I've got $300,000 in my house and I want to go buy this car. I'll just buy it. Not without another loan, like a home equity loan or, you know, a cash out refi or something in order to get the money out of that property, which is how those things became very popular. You're not old enough to remember it, but I am. A time when home equity lines didn't exist, or at least they weren't popular. And whatever you owed on your house, you owed. And if you had equity in it, the only way you got it was to sell it. And then
So you couldn't
people,
get,
that's right. And then you
yeah.
probably do remember the advertising campaigns that came out saying, you know, access the equity in your home as your savings, right? So that you could take a home equity line of credit. Take a loan against the equity in your home and use that money for something else. But that is, in fact, not liquidity. That is debt.
Didn't we talk about this before? Did you say, or am I just making this up, or it was some kind of fever dream, that a home equity loan is the same thing as a second mortgage?
Yes, I said it. It's not a fever dream.
Okay. I've got you in my head at night. Okay. Annuity, CD, CD. Okay.
I'm really impressed though, because while you were saying that, I thought, oh my gosh, what have I said and how has she remembered it? So great. This is exactly what we're trying to accomplish. Yes, a home equity line, I don't care what fancy name you label it, is a second mortgage on your house. It is secured by your home. Okay. So that's not liquidity, that's debt. Just because you could take the cash, it isn't, hey, I just went to my savings account and pulled the money out, right? Now you have a payment you have to make back on your equity line. So it's debt. Okay. Bear market versus bull market. Okay. So now we're into the investment side of things. Now, if I were to ask you, can I put you on the spot and say, what do you think
Sure,
of
go ahead.
bear market versus bull market? Tell me how you describe that.
I'm not bad at this particular area. Bear market is when things are going well and a bull is bad, or is it the opposite?
I think that's what
It's the
most people would
opposite.
say. I think most people, the opposite, but it would depend on your perspective, right? Some people love a bear market because it means that stock prices are beaten down and that gives them an
That's
opportunity to buy at a
to
low rate.
buy. Yeah.
Other people love a bull market because they're fairly aggressive and they're benefiting from that, right? So that's the point is, you know, it's
Okay.
not just how you define these, but it is how what they mean to you. And how you utilize these. So a bear market, for instance, is a declining stock market with high unemployment, right? So, and we could be, well, never mind what we could be doing. We might be getting there soon. We don't know. But I want to say there's falling share prices. So you have, you know, high unemployment and a declining market. That's a squeeze, right? You're going to feel that sort of squeeze, right? And then it has to be done over an extended period of time. I make my little notes so I don't get
Why did we name
too
them
worried up.
Barren Bullet? It should have been like a mouse and a lion, so you'd know like the mouse was the low area and the lion was the big, right? Wouldn't that have been easier to figure out?
Well, somehow I think a bear seemed to be more reticent than a bull in its
Okay.
approach. But that's a good question. Maybe we should Google that, exactly why those terms were chosen. So, good question. So, a bull market is the opposite, right? It's a rising stock market with a low level of unemployment and an increase in the stock prices. So, I think a lot of people do say, a bull market is when the market is on fire over a long period of time and you can't lose money because the stocks are going so well. If you're in those stocks and that's what your attitude is, then you love that. However, you might have heard bonds and stocks, right? Bonds move one way when stocks move another. There are people who like a bear market for certain reasons. So it isn't that one is good and one is bad, but I do think that I asked you for that and I appreciate you giving it to us.
Oh, no problem.
That that's a reason that people think that. Yeah.
Do you watch The Price is Right ever? Have you ever watched Price is Right?
Oh, years ago. Yeah, is it still on?
Okay. But I always think about the little guy that used to go up the mountain, and like if you guessed too high, he would fall off. That's what I feel like with the bull market. Like if you don't get out at the right time, like you're just gonna fall right off that hill. So it just makes me a little nervous.
Well, okay,
I think of it as price of right terms.
It has to do with your risk tolerance and your asset allocation. Two more terms that I want to get in at least before we're done here today. So your risk tolerance is just your comfort level at which you can, where can you be comfortable if there are market swings? Let's suppose you go into a bear market. Is your risk tolerance able to handle that? Do you have enough maybe equity hanging around or loose money hanging around that you can tolerate waiting for a bull market to come back? Is your risk tolerance such that you can stomach buying stocks at beat up prices and sitting on them and waiting for the bull market to come back? Because that's what you might see in a bear market. You might have that opportunity, but not everybody can do it.
I have a coworker here who does this. He puts money into the stocks and he's really good at it, but over any given period of time in a couple months, he's lost anywhere from up to like 27,000. He'll gain back like 17,000 the next day. I would be in the therapist's office every day. Like, I don't know how he's okay with this, but he's kind of made back everything he's lost, and he'll gain like a bunch and then he'll lose. I'm like, forget it. It's a lot.
So without knowing that portfolio, that does not sound like somebody who's really good at it.
Well, maybe not.
but I understand what you're saying, and he might be really good at it. That might be a very small portion of his portfolio. He may be trading, might be day trading or short-term trading, and he may have the stomach to do it, and he may really end up okay in the end about that. But if what he's really doing is making, losing, the idea is to make money. Did
Yeah, it's
I
like
say
people
that?
that
The
play the
idea is to make money.
make money. It's like the scratch tickets when people always tell you the winning one that they got. I just won $500. Well, you didn't tell me the thousand you spent trying to get there. I
Yeah.
think it's the same with stocks. People say that.
Well, you've touched on something there, and that is more about emotion than risk tolerance, but it is a problem for some people. Not everybody. A lot of people do very well with it, right? But a lot of times it is I want the win. I love the excitement of getting the stock price at that. They'll chase a stock down or chase a stock up. Yeah, there's some of that to be said, that there's a sort of gambler's mentality about that, especially in the day trading industry. Asset allocation and diversification, I wanted to talk about in relation to your risk tolerance. So asset allocation. Okay, maybe the answer is in the question there, but what does that really mean? I'm allocating my assets. Allocating them to what? You're allocating them to different areas within your portfolio. So how much is going to go to a stock? You're just categorizing, right? Asset allocation is another way of saying categorizing my assets. So I'm going to put a label on these and I'm going to say this much is going to stock. This much is going to fixed accounts or cash or cash equivalents, right? Or bonds or real estate or whatever types of assets, whether they're tangible, hard brick and mortar stuff like your house, or intangible like like a patent or a trademark, right? That might still be considered an asset, but it's an intangible asset, right? You can't touch it and feel it other than the little booklet they send you, right? So that's all asset allocation is identifying of breaking up and categorizing where your different assets are going to go within your portfolio. But we almost always talk about asset allocation and diversification as one term, because diversifying is actually choosing many different paths for your money. So you could say, I'm allocating my assets by buying this much in Apple and this much in Sears and this much in I lost a Tractor Supply. You could do that, but that would all be stock still, right? And so that's maybe not diversified. You might have allocated your assets, but you haven't diversified. So diversification is about splitting it up so that you don't have too much of your portfolio in any one area. And it's said by financial professionals, it's not always the case, but it is said that that may help you to manage your risk tolerance. And actually, over a longer period of time, your portfolio may perform better because of that diversification. Because if
So if
something's
you're losing,
money, something's gaining.
That's what I was going to ask you. Going back real quick, I don't want to run out of time, but going back real quick to the liquid, is that similar to where you should have like 6 months' salary or however much individually you think you need if you were to lose your job or whatever? Should you have a certain amount that's always liquid?
Yes, but you always try to get me to give a number. Yes, I think you should always have some liquid capital. Capital isn't just another word for cash, okay? Working money that you have. So you should always have some liquid capital because, and if you want to sound really smart, start talking about capital instead of money and cash, right? Because you never know what's going to come down the pike. We could have an emergency within your family. We could have an emergency within the country. Anything could happen, and you may need to get to some cash quickly. That being said, too much liquid cash is a waste.
Okay, so there's so much to this, and I'm sure people are going to have questions. I probably prompted 12 questions just by throwing stuff in there about the prices, right? But let me get your phone number.
I love it. 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. You've got all sorts of information up there, really easy to kind of get through there and be able to plug stuff in. Plus, I love too, you've got little videos up there that kind of, where you're actually in the video walking people through different things, which
Yes,
is fantastic.
I'm always there in video or in person. And if people like this sort of thing, write in and tell us, and we'll do another show with some more terms and work on our financial fluency.
All right, we'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.